Welcome to the Bible class of Jews for Jesus with Bob Mendelson.
Hosea is our final book that we're going to study of the 12, the minor prophets, the Older Testament 12, as compared with the Newer Testament 12, which would be Peter and James and John, etc. Hosea was a prophet who lived and prophesied, like so many others, just before the destruction of Israel in 722 BC. Same time frame as we studied last week and a few weeks before. He preached to the northern kingdom, to Israel. And throughout the book, you'll see that he refers to Israel and Ephraim. Ephraim's the largest tribe in Israel, and sometimes everybody up north is called Ephraim. Sort of like when you're in Perth, like I was last week, and they say the eastern states, you know, New South Wales. They just say Sydney, and they mean everybody over east. In the same way, we say Perth, and we mean Kalgoorlie, and we mean Bunbury and Margaret River. So similarly, they use the term Ephraim. Who was he?
He was the second son of Joseph.
Of Joseph, yeah. He was second. Manasseh was the older.
And when it was time for the blessing, the grandfather to bless them, he said, give me Ephraim first, and then Manasseh. But Joseph says, no, Manasseh is first. He's the eldest.
It was a common theme in Genesis, wasn't it?
Yeah.
To bless the wrong guy, although it wasn't the wrong guy. The Bible begins in Hosea chapter 1. The word of the Lord came to Hosea, the son of this fellow, Beeri, in the days of, and he lists four kings of Judah and one king of Israel. Five kings, but if you look at it historically, you notice that there are actually seven kings who reigned during this time. And two of them just reigned so short they didn't even get listed. What a ripoff. You know, it's sort of like prime ministers who are just of lesser consequence. And right away, God tells Hosea to go, in verse 2, take for yourself a wife of harlotry. Have children of harlotry, because the land commits flagrant harlotry, forsaking the Lord. If I were Hosea, whose name means salvation, if I were in that place, I kind of would send a note, an email maybe to the Lord. Maybe I'd pray a couple extra days and I'd say, you sure you got that right? Or I would go and suss it out with a couple other of my buddies and say, I think the Lord wants me to go find a prostitute. What do you reckon? My guess is most fellows would say, what are you, nuts? Even so, he went, verse 3, and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bore him a son. Boom, just like that. He's the kind of prophet you want in your prophet school. He's the kind of prophet that God would be happy with. The Lord said this, so he went and did it. Doesn't say he took a week to pray about it. Doesn't say he strongly considered and then went to Tarshish, like our buddy Jonah did. But straight away, he went and did. Now, here's the problem. In Deuteronomy 22, we have this whole marriage thing and about not mixing wool and linen together, about putting tzitzit on the corners of your garment. That's always kind of neat. And then, verse 13, if any man takes a wife and goes into her and then turns against her and charges her with shameful deeds and publicly defames her and says, take this woman when I came here. I didn't find her a virgin. Then the girl's father and mother shall take and bring out the evidence of the girl's virginity. The girl's father should say in verse 16, I gave my daughter this man for a wife. He turned against her. Look, he's charged her with shameful deeds, but this is the evidence. And they spread the garment before the elders. The elders take the man and chastise him and fine him 100 shekels because he publicly defamed a virgin of Israel. But if the charge is true that the girl, verse 20, was not found a virgin, then they shall bring out the girl to the doorway of her father's house. The men of the city should stone her to death because she's committed an act of folly in Israel by playing the harlot in her father's house. In this way you shall purge the evil from among you. It was so strict because God didn't want Israel to be looking like the rest of the world. Now with that as a backdrop, how does God tell Hosea to take Gomer as a bride? So some argue, and I've read commentaries that say that he took her and she was a virgin, but became a harlot. And I think they're negotiating with the stark reality that God told Hosea to go go take a prostitute. I think people try to make God into a more consistent God. Or they try to say, God would never invite a prophet to go take a hooker. However, I think the simplest reading is pretty stark and bare and naked. And it says, no, go and take this prostitute. And look at verse 2. Take a wife of harlotry, Zununim. Have children of Zununim, for the land commits zana, this flagrant prostitution. And then he makes it clear. Me'achare Yahweh, forsaking or going away from or following, not following, but going the wrong way from the Lord. Hosea's marriage is a picture of God's relationship with Israel. Hosea's choice of a prostitute was exactly like God's choice of Abraham. He was just another sinner like the rest of the people. He didn't deserve to be chosen, but that is not what the Jewish people thought. They thought Abraham was special because of his own merit and his upright character. I mean, there are plenty of references in Talmud to that. And a lot of people wonder about chosenness. Why is Abraham chosen? Why is Isaac? Because God knew that they would choose him. No, that's not the reason. Because then it becomes God is a responder instead of the people respond to God's call. It's hard to say God chose certain ones to be his. Because what that says is God didn't choose others. And we don't like it that way. This young gal over in New Zealand with whom I'm spending some good time on Skype, new believer, says it's a hard thing for her to think that God is so mean to send some people to hell. I understand that, and I appreciate her stark reality of questioning that. But the Bible's getting through to her, and this is good. God may be using Hosea's marriage to this woman to make the point that no one is special of their own. In just a couple chapters, we're going to see Israel complaining because we thought that we deserved more. And so he's saying, nope, you were like a hooker. You don't deserve anything except the pits of hell.
Or being stoned to death.
Yeah, that's exactly right. If Deuteronomy 22 is correct, then this woman should have been stoned, not applauded, not had a marriage. So the marriage to Gomer is an example of God's relationship with Israel. We alternate between the events and the message and God's explanation of how these events relate to the nation. So it starts with the sin of Jeroboam. Maybe we should look at that first. This goes back to 1 Kings chapter 12. First we start with Rehoboam, who is one of the two sons of his father Solomon. And then in verse 20, it came about when all Israel heard that Jeroboam had returned that they sent and called the assembly, made him king over all Israel. None but the tribe of Judah followed the house of David. Now when Rehoboam had come to Jerusalem, he assembled all the house of Judah, the tribe of Benjamin, 180,000 chosen men who were warriors to fight against Israel, to restore the kingdom to Rehoboam, the son of Solomon. After Solomon dies, the nation divides. Rehoboam, king of Judah in the south, Jeroboam, king of Israel, up north. Jeroboam is thinking to himself that he's going to lose power if people are allowed to go back to Jerusalem to worship God. I think Jeroboam knew something about the United Kingdom, but he was reluctant to deny himself and let Rehoboam lead. Both of them were so full of themselves that they wouldn't deny themselves. Hosea chapter 1, verse 11 says, "The sons of Judah and the sons of Israel will be gathered together, and they'll appoint for themselves one leader, and they'll go up from the land, and great will be the day of Jezreel." In verse 28 of the passage in 1 Kings chapter 12, we see Jeroboam devised a way to stop the reunification of the people. Jeroboam built Shechem in the hill country of Ephraim and lives there. He went out from there and built Penuel. He says in his heart, "Kingdom will return to the house of David." So the king consulted and made two golden calves. Heard that one before. And he said to them, "It's too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Behold your gods, O Israel, that brought you up from the land of Egypt." He set one in Bethel and the other he put in Dan. This thing became a sin, for the people went to worship before the one as far as Dan. And he made houses on high places, made priests from among all the people who were not Levites, And Jeroboam instituted the feast in the 8th month, on the 15th day of the month, like the feast which is in Judah, meaning tabernacles. He went up to the altar, thus he did in Bethel, sacrificing to the calves which he had made. And he stationed the priests there whom he had made. How horrible is this? He went up to the altar that he made in Bethel on the 15th day of the 8th month.
Why did God just send lightning and strike Jeroboam?
I've often thought that. Verse 2. If Jeroboam had really been worshiping God, he would have been seeing the glory, his own sinfulness. He would have gone down to Jerusalem. He would have seen Solomon's temple. He would have beat his breast. He would have seen the priest doing the priestly thing on the right days. Jeroboam did not really know God, did he? So when Hosea lists these kings at the beginning of his book, I think it's more of a way to place the chronological occurrence of his book. It's a way to emphasize the climate in which he's ministering. It's foundational, probably, to understanding the problems Hosea is going to deal with in the book. So back to Hosea, because we see Jeroboam right there listed in 1:1. This is the word of the Lord that came to this guy during the days of those seven kings and during the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel. It's covering a lot of territory.
Now, this Jeroboam that is mentioned here in the beginning of Hosea, he's not the Jeroboam that was in Solomon's.
Right, same name. Then Jezreel, who's named in verse 4, the son of Gomer and Hosea. Jezreel means God scatters. I don't know that I want to name my kid that. I don't know if I could have been Hosea. I'm so proud of him. I can't wait to meet him when I get to heaven. I think Hosea is a noble guy. To marry a chick who's a prostitute and to do it because God told him, because Israel was forsaking the Lord. He takes her and she bears a son. Now, prostitutes don't stay loyal. And they don't have children. Or if they do, they slaughter them. They sacrifice them. In modern days, they would abort them. In those days, they had them and then aborted them, sacrificing them. And here she has a child, and they become testimonies in Israel.
So Jezreel means God scatters.
Scatters, yeah. Yisrael. Not Yisrael, but it's a Zion, Resh, Ayin, Aleph, Lamed. For yet a little while, and I will punish, verse 4, the house of Jehu for the bloodshed of Jezreel. I'll put an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. On that day I'll break the bow in Israel in the valley of Jezreel. What was so bad about what Jehu did at Jezreel? This is going to be about Jehu in 1st and 2nd Kings.
Verse 5, what are they meaning by that? That I will break
the bow.
Bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel.
It was going to be a battle, which is coming with the destruction and the capture by the Assyrians in 722.
But what did Jehu do bad?
He killed Joram, Ahaziah, the king of Judah, 42 of Ahaziah's relatives, and several people of the Baal cult. Though the execution of Baal's servants was certainly in agreement with God's will, Jehu's attack on the house of David went too far. Let's look at 2 Kings chapter 10. And the summary of what he did, I mean, he did some good things, but he didn't do it all. And here's one of those frustrating things for those who think religion is good enough. Jehu was a very positive influence on the Jewish community, but he didn't finish the job. Jehu wrote letters, sent them to Samaria in chapter 10, verse 1. Ahab had 70 sons, and Jehu was going to take them all out. This is pretty remarkable. Verse 6, he wrote a letter a second time. If you're on my side, take heed. Come to me at Jezreel tomorrow. King's sons were there, and he took them out, which is great. Verse 11, Jehu killed all who remained at the house of Ahab. Ahab's the no-good guy, Jezebel's husband. He arose and departed, went to Samaria. Jehu, verse 13, met the relatives of Ahaziah, king of Judah, and said, who are you? We're relatives. Come, take them alive. Took them alive. Killed them at the pit of Beit Eched. 42 men. Left none of them. This is great. He's doing a good job, if you think the zeal of killing these people is good. And then verse 17, when he came to Samaria, he killed all who remained to Ahab in Samaria until he destroyed him, according to the word of the Lord, spoken to Elijah. Sounds like he's doing well. He gathers, verse 18, all the people and says, Ahab served Baal. Jehu will serve him much.
Jehu would serve Baal much? That doesn't sound right.
No, it doesn't. But here's the deal. He got his religion confused. Now summon all the prophets of Baal, all the worshippers, let no one be missing, a great sacrifice. So they sanctified him. And then what does Jehu do? He stations himself in verse 24, 80 guys outside, and says, the one who permits any of the men whom I bring into your hands to escape shall give up his life in exchange. So he breaks down the sacred pillar of Baal, brings down the house of Baal, and made it a latrine. So in other words, it was all a setup. He fooled them. And he eradicated, verse 28, Baal out of Israel. Everybody would say, Jehu, fantastic. However, verse 29, however, and boy, you can't miss this rock that just sits there. As for the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which he made Israel sin, from these Jehu did not depart. Even the golden calves that were at Bethel and Dan. So he almost exhaustively cleaned up the turf. But he left the residue of the sin of the king. Two golden calves. Horrible. And it says in verse 30, the Lord said to Jehu, because you've done well in executing what's right in my eyes and have done to the house of Ahab according to all that is in my heart, your sons shall sit on the throne of Israel to the third and fourth generation. But Jehu was not careful to walk in the law of the Lord, the God of Israel, with all his heart. He did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam, which he made Israel sin.
Who's Jehu?
He's the son of Jehoshaphat, the son of Nimshi. He's a royal guy, but he's not a king. Ahaziah was the king of Judah.
He's not a king. Was he a general, commander?
He must have been someone of influence. He's got good yichus with Jehoshaphat.
Is he of the house of Israel or of the house of Judah?
It'd have to be Israel. Here's the real problem, that they're pursuing their own agendas and change their concept of God in the process because the real God was too painful to keep around. Remember King Saul did the same thing when Samuel told him, the word of the Lord is this, go and kill Agag and get rid of him and get rid of all the animals. And he said, you know, I did really well. I did just what you said. You know, I kept a couple of the sheep. Samuel said, what's the bleating of sheep in my ears? Wait, I hear this noise coming out of your back bedroom. He said, well, oh, those are the sheep that I kept back, but those were for sacrifice. He said, the Lord desires obedience much more than sacrifice. Do what he says. Don't try to impress him with religion. And I think that is the problem of Jehu and the problem in Israel at the time as Hosea is prophesying. So he uses this image that would have been understood to those guys that's new to us, but it is well known. This whole concept of these two golden calves is stark and embarrassing and calls up everything about the Exodus that we should not maintain.
Mulling over sin, glorifying where they were.
Yeah, and basically a new religion. And when I think about what Judaism has done since 70, or really 90 CE, at the Council of Jamnia, Yavne, under Yochanan ben Zakkai, when we came up with a whole new religion after the temple, it's the same thing. We can call it Judaism, we can call it the biblical religion, we can call the rabbis rabbis, even though we're still waiting for priests, we can call whatever we want. But end of the day, God's not going to be happy with it. That's the linkage in my mind. Jeroboam and the Jewish people changed God into a calf so that he was no longer a holy God, but something that would bless them. The golden calf is not going to say, thou shalt not, because it can't talk. So therefore, it can only approve. And he appointed the priests who would only approve what the king had said. It's got a built-in authorizer. Back to Hosea. Name him Jezreel, verse 4. For yet a little while, and I'll punish the house of Jehu for the bloodshed of Jezreel. And I'll put an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. On that day, I'll break the bow. The bow is the offense. Bow and arrow. You know, I'll break the capacity for you to defend yourself and to do battle. I'm pretty sure the Valley of Jezreel comes out in chapter 9 of 2 Kings as well. But we don't have time to unpack that. So now, he has relations with Gomer again. In verse 6, she conceives again and gives birth this time to a daughter. And the Lord said to him, name her, not Susan, not Leah, not Rachel, but Lo-Ruhamah. I mean, how horrible is this? Lo Ruchama, I will no longer have compassion on the house of Israel, that I would ever forgive them. What's your name, sweetheart? She comes to grade one. My name is God will not have compassion on you, O Israel. I've done enough mercy, and now you're not going to get compassion or mercy any longer. But, verse 7, I will have compassion on the house of Judah, the other guys, and deliver them by the Lord their God, and will not deliver them by bow, sword, battle, horses, or horsemen. After the Assyrians defeated the northern kingdom of Israel, they turned on the southern kingdom. But although they'd conquered almost every town in the south, the night before they were supposed to attack Jerusalem, 185,000 Assyrian soldiers mysteriously died in their sleep. The next morning, the army fled back home. And there were stories like that in 1967 when there was a battle for Jerusalem and the Suez. And there were stories of tanks turning back around in the desert because they saw giant, almost angels, angelic forces standing there guarding Israel. And they just turned and ran back. Now, were there really angels there? Were there really giant Israeli forces? We don't know. And when you think about Lo Ruchama, but Ruchama, that is Rachamim, coming to Judah, it is not because Judah lives so much better. It's just because God will have mercy on whom he'll have mercy. It is not warranted, even as we said earlier about Abraham. It's not because Abraham was going to choose God or Abraham was a good sinner. It's because God chose Abraham and Abraham responded. Not because God looked down and said, wow, look at that guy, Abe. He does really well. I think I'll choose him, as if God is the responder. Not the way it works. So Rachamim, mercies, or as you said, Rachmanis, the old Yiddish, is not getting what you deserve. Not getting what you deserve. So if Racham were given to Israel, then she would have been spared and not given what she deserved in the punishment of the Assyrian attack. However, God chose to be giving Rachamim, or Rachmanis, to the south, to Judah, not because Judah was righteous, but because God is righteous. Yeah, but that's not fair. Okay, take it up with him later. That's just the way he did it. So Lo Ruchama up north, Ruchama down south. Racham, same word. When she'd weaned Lo Ruchama, I mean, what would be her nickname? When she had weaned Lo Ruchama, how old would that be?
About two or three.
She conceived and gave birth to a son. And the Lord said, name him. Now, we don't know to whom he said this. It looks like he said this to her. Not to Hosea. Earlier he'd talked to Hosea, but now it sounds like God is talking to her because she is becoming part of the Mishpacha. She's getting it. He's having mercy even on Gomer. No, God is having mercy on her. She conceived, gave birth to a son. The Lord said, name him Lo Ami, not my people. For you are not my people and I am not your God. This formula, be my people, be my God, is said over and over throughout the record of Older Testament and Newer Testament. Not new at all. Name him Lo Ami, for you are not my people and I'm not your God. How would you like to hear that? What would we call this in modern parlance? What would we call this where God forsakes his people? He disowns, he disavows, he disowns. This is horrible.
You've been listening to the Bible class of Jews for Jesus in Australia. For more information, contact Jews for Jesus, Post Office Box 925, Sydney, Australia 2001. God bless you.